We're talking with the ghost hunter, John Kochuba. His website, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We're talking about his latest book, Ghost Hunters, on the trail of mediums, dowsers, spirit seekers, and other investigators of America's paranormal world. And we'll be back with more and take your stories in a special two-hour edition now of Coast to Coast AM. John, why don't they move on? Why do these spirits hang around, these ghosts?
There's a lot of theories for that. Some people think that, you know, they're here to impart some message, or there's some unfinished business that, they maybe had a bad relationship with their family, and they're trying to still maintain that and correct that situation. So there's those kinds of reasons, or sort of external reasons. But then there's other people that just, are literally lost, just honestly haven't found the way. It's sort of, we don't know the process, of course, you know, from how we get from here to there. But think of a bus, you know, you get off a one stop short of your destination, and you're looking around, you don't know where you are. It's got to be pretty surprising to find yourself dead, and perhaps you just don't find the mechanism to get to where you're supposed to get. So I think there's that, and I think those are probably the easier ones to move on when I've seen psychics and mediums on investigations do that, because it's just a matter, it seems to me, of sort of saying, there's the door, go through it, you know? But the ones that have more of a reason to stay, they're tougher. Because they don't want to go a lot of times.
All right, let me put your back against the wall on this one.
Sure.
Angels, what are they?
Well, I hate to use theological terms, but I mean, an angel, for every practical purpose, is something that was never incarnated as a human being. It's a being of goodness, you know, a pure essence that's always been around. Created by God, if you go to theology route, but I don't. So for me, this goes back to, again, there's other types of energies. There's all kinds of energies. And I think that there is probably energies that are, I don't know if you can call it good, but let's say positive, versus sort of negative energies. And I think that some of that has always been around and always will be around, again, going with the quantum physics theories. You want to call that an angel? You can. You want to call the negative one a devil or a demon? You can. But I don't think they're beings in the sense of what we consider to be beings. And I know I'm going to take flack on that one, but that's okay.
Well, you might. You might. But I mean, but I believe angels. Look, we've had some of the most incredible angelic stories I've ever heard. As we get close to the holiday season, we talk about it a lot. And people have called in with stories that have got to have been originated with angelic intervention. They're just too unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Well, and let's look at something else. I mean, I talked much earlier in the show about the idea of alternate realities and, you know, beings from other dimensions and everything else. That's a possibility there. I mean, perhaps that is what we're calling angels, or maybe even demons too. That still, you know, beings of energy, because I think that's still what it's all about. I think that's the basic elemental character. But perhaps that's what they are. Maybe they do come from another realm and have more insight, more, abilities, powers, if you want to call it that. And perhaps that's what it is.
Have you ever had a case where a church was haunted or some religious place?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I've written about several churches of different denominations, and you certainly hear about temples, especially like in Asia. I just spent 2 months in Thailand earlier this year, and it was a fascinating experience. But so many temples in Thailand, especially, are said to have resident spirits. And, you know, it makes sense, because if you go with the theory that ghosts, spirits, are creatures of energy and therefore sort of need energy to live, if you want to call it that, what better place to get some really spiritual energy than a religious site where you've had people gathering, you know, for who knows how long, in prayer, in meditation, all that creating all this spiritual energy. I think if you were a ghost, it would be a great place to get in touch with that, to get in touch with people's emotions, with their spirit, with their energy. So I'm not surprised at all when I discover religious sites that are haunted. It makes sense to me.
What do you think of the Ouija board, John?
I have mixed feelings about that. You know, you see certainly in the movies, how bad they are, and the fact that they can open portals to uncontrolled spirits is something you really can't control. I can say this. I used a Ouija board on an investigation, the same one that I told you earlier about with the two little children. We didn't contact them through a Ouija board, but we did have the psychic bring in the board. And this was by her choosing, by the way. And myself and another investigator were really not happy with that because we have misgivings about using that. But she brought it in, and she sort of begged us to use it, and we let her use it. And we sat around a table, and we got the name, something spelled out the name Esther. There was a woman that was supposed to be haunting the house, and we got this name Esther.
Esther.
Right. And she said that she died in the house 1878.
That's an old name.
It is, very much. And this is old, old farmhouse, old farm country. And then at one point, we said to her, she said that the children were hers, because somebody asked her about the children, and were they hers? And she said, yes. So that was interesting. We thought that was kind of a hit, if you want to call it that. But then they asked her if she wanted to move on, and, if they could help her move on to wherever she needed to go. And the planchette, the little device that...
Yeah, that you move around.
Right. It just immediately shot across to the word no, and it just stopped there. And after that, we lost all contact. There was nothing more, no more movement at all. So I said, okay, if this is actually working, you've contacted a spirit in the house who violently has said no, she doesn't want to go. I felt uneasy with that. And I said, I think we should stop with the Ouija board because I don't know if maybe there's something else coming through here besides Esther or what. So we did. We stopped. And that was the only time I ever used one. And I don't, they're not toys. I mean, I don't trust them.
No, not at all. Let's go to some of the phones. Let's go to Quartzsize, Arizona, west of the Rockies. Rick, you can get us started. Go ahead, Rick.
Yes. Interesting what you're speaking tonight. Obviously, the guest has been around a lot of intuitives because he's got some real good truths there. When you were asking earlier about some of the ghosts, are they here to help us? I wanted to tell you my most famous story.
Sure.
This happened, I've told it to you once before many years ago when I first got back to America. I've been here 10 years, got here 10 days before 9/11. I was an intuitive in Thailand and in Bali, Indonesia. But I was on my honeymoon with my Indonesian wife in Thailand, and she's a singer. And we had gone from the islands down south all the way up to Chiang Mai in the north, and I was known by people there because I was a medium there before I met my wife. We took our honeymoon there. So she liked music. 2 days before we're getting ready to leave Chiang Mai, she says, I really want to hear some music. Their German friend said there was some music going on. Well, there's a club called the Brasserie in Chiang Mai, Thailand. It's across the river, and it's right on the river. And this German fellow said, do you like Jimi Hendrix? And I said, yeah, sure. And he goes, well, this man plays just like Jimi Hendrix. And I'm going, yeah, right, who could play just like Jimi Hendrix, right? So I'm sitting in the audience. My wife and myself had dinner. There was a soloist on, and then comes Took, the man who owns the restaurant, and he's the one that plays like Jimi Hendrix. He looks like Hendrix. He's got a T-shirt with Hendrix's face on it, except his hair is not curly, right? But he's got it out like an afro. It's black hair, and he's got the look. So anyway, he starts playing this one tune, and it was good. I mean, it sounded like Hendrix, And sometimes when music takes me away, I close my eyes. Well, when I see spirit, a ghost, it becomes a bright green, a fluorescent green, like orb or energy. That lets me know, and usually I'll feel it at the top of my crown chakra. I'll feel it, kind of a numb tingling on the top of the head. That lets me know something's around. So I close my eyes, I'm looking at this guy, and I see his form, and there's another head over his shoulder, and then there's this big green splash of energy into his fingering hand, and he starts playing another Hendrix song, and then another one, and I'm hearing this tingling, I'm feeling a tingling sensation, so mentally I ask the spirit, okay, who are you? He says, I'm Jimi Hendrix, man. And I said, well, you got my vote because this man is kicking your tunes, you know. And he said, yeah, but see, this man has been brought forward to bring the Eastern music to the Western music, to bring the two together. And I said, well, that's phenomenal. He said, but the problem is when he's channeling me, he don't know he's channeling me. And what happens is afterwards he gets a big old glass of Mekong whiskey and drinks it down, and he's going to eat his liver up before he ever gets a chance to make these albums happen. And I go, well, that makes a lot of sense. He says, I need you to tell the man to stop drinking. And I said, well, this is the way I work, Jimmy. I says, whenever a spirit comes to me and wants me to deliver a message, I tell him, you got to give me two things I couldn't possibly know about this character so that he doesn't think I'm a complete idiot. And then if those two things pan out, I'll give him any message you want. And so after the show was over, this man, he played behind his back like Hendrix.
There's only one other guy who can do that. That's Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top.
Well, I tell you what, if you go to Chiang Mai, Thailand, to the Brasserie, Took can play like Hendrix like you would not believe. He's amazing. So we get outside, and here's this big glass of Mekong whiskey. And I asked him, I says, did you ever have a white dog with a curly tail that now passed on? And he goes, yeah, I did. And I said, do you have a birthmark on your inner shoulder, on your inner arm? And he says, I don't know. And my wife said, well, can I look? And she looked, and there it was. It was a big one of these black birthmarks that a lot of Asians have. And said to him that, look, Jimi Hendrix told me to tell you got to stop drinking this stuff, that you're channeling him and you're bringing him through, and it sends you out of body. And he says, it's okay if you smoked a little ganja, but it ain't okay for you to do whiskey because it'll rot your liver. And he said, wow, man, I was in England outside of the place where he died. You know, and sometimes when I'm playing, I go, come on, Jimmy. I said, well, he's there with you. So he goes away to the temple on the top of the mountain overnight, comes back. We're back the next night to see him. And that green energy was now in him like a champagne glass. And it went across his heart chakra, just like a champagne glass, no longer outside of him. So afterwards, after he got through playing his whole thing, I said, hey, Jimmy, what's going on? He says, oh, I went to the temple. I welcomed him in all night. I meditated. I said, well, he's there, and he wanted me to tell you that Valerie would be very proud of you. And when I said that, his mouth just dropped right open. And Rita, my wife, said, do you know somebody named Valerie? Do you know somebody named Valerie? And finally, he said, yes, I went to college in the United States, and I picked up a guitar the first time I met this woman and started playing it for the first time. She was my girlfriend in America.
See, it's got magic to it, John Kachuba. That's a great story.
It does. It's a great story.
I mean, you could write another book just with stories.
Well, and I know the temple in Chiang Mai, too. I was there, like I said, earlier this year, and I'd been up to that temple. But that's interesting, and I think what I like about that was the mention of meditation. How he said the physician went up and meditated and brought him in. And that's something that I believe in, too. I practice meditation daily. And I do think that that's another way of making contact with spirit. You don't have to be a medium or intuitive like this gentleman was. But I do think you can practice meditation and learn to be more receptive, more open to things that are outside your normal realm.
Why do some spirits gladly move on? And others hover and hang around.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. I think it goes back to the same thing before, that I think some of them hang around because they do have unfinished business, or they have some reasons. Like, apparently, this Jimi Hendrix was hanging around to help this musician be a better musician. You know, why he attached himself to this particular person or not is beyond anybody's guess, I suppose. But I think they do serve some purpose like that.
Next up, let's go to our first-time caller, John in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Go ahead, John. Thanks for calling.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Things have happened to me throughout my life, and I just wanted to mention two of them. And many years ago, I was working at the shore in the off-season. And one night when I was off the next day, I went down to the beach and sat in the dunes. And I was just looking out at the sea. And I saw down at the water's edge a man come out. He was wearing a yellow, looked like a yellow jacket. And I was only about 50 feet away. And he did a twist, and then he fell down on the sand. So I got up and I went down there, and I had a flashlight, and I walked up to, and I can't find him. I can't find him at all. So I'm thinking, well, I don't know what happened. This is crazy. I did go home and went to bed. I was off the next day. The next day I had to go to work. I get up, I go and get a newspaper. I go in and here, the newspaper were talking about a couple guys in a fishing boat. They had gotten lost in a storm out at sea. And the one man was found a day later, exactly where I had seen this other thing.
Jeez.
And I was just totally blown away by this. So I went to the police and told them, which of course probably was a mistake because they... All they did was investigate me, and they said, well, we don't know what you're talking about, friend, but, you know, you're okay. The other thing was about 10 years ago, I was with my girlfriend. We were at an inn, like a bed and breakfast. And we're sitting in the bed, and we're both reading. We each had night tables with lamps on them next to our side of the bed, and we're just reading. And I see something out of the top of my eye, and I look up, and coming through the wall on my left is a woman, and she's lit. Well, I don't know where the light is coming from.
Coming through the wall.
She's stepping out of the wall. She's stepping out of the wall, and she has a nightgown on and a... I forget what they call it. They used to wear on their heads a nightcap, I guess. And she starts walking across in front of the bed, and of course I'm just sitting there in awe, staring. And she takes her hand, and puts her finger to her lips, and smiles, and looks, and then she looks at my girlfriend, and I'm following her. And she continues across the room and goes through the opposite wall. And my girlfriend says, she grabs my hand. She said, did you see that? Did you see that? And I'm like, yeah. yeah. I saw it. What the heck was that? And I've had a lot of other things happen, but I don't want to take too much time.
Well, what's amazing, John, is you do it and you have witnesses. That's a sighting.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that his girlfriend saw it too, and she didn't say anything until after a while, but obviously she was looking at it while he was looking at it too. They both saw it and both witnessed it. And I think that's, for me, that's the best kind of proof.
You know? Absolutely. John, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. As we continue with phone calls with you, we'll be right back. We're with John Kachuba. John, tell me about some of your work with mediums and dowsers.
Well, dowsers, I actually douse myself. I learned how to do that a while back, and I do it myself, not so much to find ghosts, because I don't think that's really what you do.
And by the way, I used to think it was just for finding water when
right.
I was a kid.
Yeah, exactly. And that's really pretty much how, that's the old sort of traditional way, the water witches, they call them, and everything else. But it could be used really for any kind of sort of kinetic energy. So anything that's moving, you know, water, just any other kind of energy for that matter, you can usually pick it up. And that's how I use it. Like on investigations, I will go through an area with a dowsing rod just to try to find areas that appear to me to have more activity, more energy.
Mm-hmm.
So once I find that, I'll say, okay, look, here's a place that we should investigate a little more. Let's take some pictures here. You know, let's maybe put a recorder here. Let's hang around, see what happens. So I just use it as kind of like a compass in a way to sort of map out an area for me. That actually happened to me at a farmhouse. And I can't believe this. I was in a barn, an old barn, and there wasn't really anything in there anymore, and I was just going through with the dowsing rods. And as I did, I was able to sort of map out this rectangle. It was probably about 10 feet long by about 6 feet or 8 feet wide. And I could tell where it was because as I stepped into the area, my rods would cross. And when I stepped out, they would open up again. So you can literally walk around and map out this big area. And I'm saying, what the heck is this? It was kind of a big rectangle in the middle of this old barn. The person who owned the building came in, and I said, this is very strange. He said, oh, you found the car. I said, the car? He said, yeah, there's an old car buried in the floor under the barn.
Amazing.
Yeah, and the question was I asked, was there anybody in the car?
You never, Jimmy Hoffa.
That's right. As I said before, I'm half Italian. I should emphasize I'm half Sicilian. So my first reaction was.
That's right.
But anyway, no, it was very interesting that he didn't know why the car was there. It was an old car. It was buried. But the idea was you're still able to detect like even the metal. So it could be used different ways. A very interesting tool, I think.
It is. Let's go to some of the calls again. First-time caller in Belmont, Michigan. Hey, Steve, it's your turn. Go ahead, Steven.
Hello, my name's Steve Foreigner.
Hi, Steve.
Hey, Steve.
And I've been trying to call in when they have ghost stories on because I have a story to share with you guys.
You got it. The platform is yours. The stage is yours.
All righty. It was back in 93. It was foggy. Real foggy night, and it was in Parnell, Michigan, at a St. Patrick's in Parnell. It was a Catholic cemetery, and my mom's buried there. She just passed away in 1990.
Ah, okay.
And my mom, we were visiting my mother's grave on that foggy night at night, and I had my dog with me, and we're talking. Me and the lady I was with were talking about people being buried in the cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
And one of her friends committed suicide and was buried towards the road down the hill from where my mom was buried up on the hill.
Okay, but in the same cemetery.
But in the same cemetery, the Catholic cemetery.
Okay.
And I told her, that doesn't mean he's in hell because he's buried down below, and my mom's in heaven because she's buried up above. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I got really upset. We were talking, and I started crying and stuff. And my dog started acting up, and we quickly ran into the car, and we left the cemetery. And right down the road, there's a place where nuns go for the church.
To their convent?
Yeah, it's okay. Like a nun convent.
Yeah.
And then this thing jumped out into the road. It looked like a satyr.
Really?
Yeah. It had like a horse's mane for the hair, and the eyes were glowing, and we had our windows rolled down, and we're only going about 10 miles an hour because it was so foggy out.
Did it just run across the road or come at you?
It stayed right in the road, and we drove by, and my dog was looking at it, and I was holding on to my dog while I was looking at it.
Roll up your windows. Roll up those windows, Steve, huh?
Yeah. The glowing, it had like glowing green eyes, but I know it wasn't a deer, and it wasn't a horse or anything like that, because I grew up on a farm, so
you know animals. John, let me ask you this: in all the places you've studied, have you ever seen anything like that? Something you don't believe in demons, but something that looks devilish?
Well, I haven't, but I have to say I have certainly spoken to many people like Steve here who have had experiences like that, where they have seen something that. Certainly it's not human. I mean, animal or savage or beastly or however you want to describe it, but certainly inhuman. That has not been my experience, but as I said, I know people who have experienced those kinds of things. And it's hard to say what that's all about. In Steve's case, a couple of clues that came out when he was speaking.
Could be a strange animal.
Could be a strange animal, sure. I mean, you know, cryptozoology is still out there, and you know, full of all kinds of things that we don't know about. And again, possibly a natural occurrence of some kind that we just don't understand yet. But he also talked about, you know, having a high emotional state, you know, fog. There's a lot of things to look at in there, too. But, yeah, sure, definitely. I've definitely heard people who have described what you would consider to be something like a demon, let's say, but, you know, certainly inhuman.
But you've not seen one.
I have not, no.
Maybe it's because of who you are, too. You know, I sometimes wonder if people who are troubled or you know, they might not be as righteous as some, that they would be more apt to see these demons.
Well, that could be. I mean, again, as I said before, I think that, you know, when we go on into a spirit realm, whatever you want to call that, we go on as whoever we were. So if we were kind of, you know, rotten, lousy people, that's how we're going to be in the afterlife. And perhaps that is what is drawn to us. I mean, perhaps we connect with that. Just as living world, you know, we tend to associate with people that we care about, that are like us, that are similar to us. We don't associate with people that are dissimilar to us. So, you know, why would any of that change? I think that's what you're saying. I mean, it could very well be that you might have some mentality that attracts or draws you to that kind of entity rather than just sort of the run-of-the-mill average kind of person that you would encounter in your normal life.
Okay, next up, let's go to Jim in Burbank, California. Thanks for holding, Jim. Go ahead.
Hello, gentlemen. I'd like to preface what I'm going to tell you with the idea that even when I say it, I have trouble believing it. I start to tell myself, well, surely I can't believe this actually happened, but it really did. And so it's on topic tonight, so I thought I'd call in and share it. I was living away at college, and my mother bought a house in Los Angeles at a place called Hancock Park. She got a very large Spanish house, a very old, big house. And I came to visit her for a weekend. And I took the big back bedroom. It was a big room with high ceilings and wood beams in this big old house. And in the middle of the night, I was not asleep. I had stayed up late, and I heard the door, the lights were out. I heard the door kind of slowly creaking. And when I was a kid, my mom used to come in and kind of see if I was asleep and kind of, you know, check on me. So I thought, oh, surely this is my mom coming in to check on me. So I'll pretend I'm asleep, and I'll leave the comforter kind of pulled up over my head, and I'll surprise her when she goes to walk out that I'm awake. So I sat there for a couple of minutes, and I felt the bed, not just a little bit, completely depressed, as if a person sat on the foot of the bed. And I mean physically move, okay? The comforter, the bed, everything. I wasn't surprised. I thought it's my mom sitting there. It stayed there for a moment or two. Then the depression went up, and I pulled the comforter down expecting to see my mom standing there, and I was going to surprise her, and there was nothing there. Blackness, darkness, an empty room. I'm breaking a sweat just telling the story. I was absolutely terrified, and I couldn't make sense of it. I went and woke my mother up. I explained everything. I slept on the floor in her room that night, even though I was a grown man. I was a college student, okay? I went back to college. She sold the house the next year, and I have never been able to understand what that was. I never saw anything. But I physically experienced an entity or some physical presence that didn't do anything malicious, didn't communicate to me. I don't understand what that was. And I had a question for your guest. It seems that some people see a spirit, and some people see things that a spirit does, like move things or... What is the difference? Does he have any in all of his encounters or investigations have any differentiation of understanding between what the two are? Why do you sometimes see a ghost? Or sometimes something just sees something move, like what happened to me?
That's a good question. Is it the ghost that wants you to see it, or do you see it? What do you think, John?
Right, it's a good question, and I'm not sure the answer to that, but I do know that people have different sensitivities. I talked a little bit earlier about, you know, training yourself through meditation. And there are people who are, you know, clairaudient, which means they can hear spirits but don't see them. There are people who are clairvoyant, who can see spirits but don't necessarily hear them. Clairsentient, people who can feel the presence of a spirit, which is what just happened to this gentleman here. Apparently, you know, he felt this this whatever right there. So we have different sensitivities to things. I mean, I don't think that's necessarily transmitted from the spirit itself as much as it's within us. And, you know, some of the really good mediums and psychics that I've met have multiple senses. You know, they have all these things. Some just have one or two, or just maybe even one. So it's a matter of, I think, our own sort of abilities and trying to train them. But, yeah, there is definitely different ways that spirits manifest, and some of us can pick up all of them, some of them. Some of us can't pick up any of them.
Well, you never know.
Right.
Next up, let's go to Pottsboro, Texas. Jared, it's your turn. Hey, Jared, go ahead.
Hey, Jordan. John, how you all doing?
Hi, thanks. Good. Thanks for calling.
I've actually got a short story and then a question following for John.
Sure.
I drove out about, I'd say, an hour out into the country to my friend's house. She's got a two-story house, and we were just, you know, hanging out, watching movies, relaxing a little bit. And the movie ends, so we're sitting there talking a little bit. She's got her back to me, and she asks a question. I see a movement out of the corner of my eye. I look over, and to the doorway of her kitchen, I see a probably about 7 foot tall humanoid shadow figure standing there. And, I mean, its head was drooping oddly, and I just had this strangest, I mean, it overcame my body of pure energy, and it didn't feel nice. I've had a few paranormal encounters before, and I've never felt one like this. And she felt me stop talking. I think she felt it, too. She turns around. It's gone. I blink. It disappears. And she says, "What's wrong?" I kind of stutter a little bit. I say, "I just saw it." And she stops me, says, "I don't want to know about it. I don't want to know what you saw." I found that odd, so I try to talk to her about it, and she doesn't want anything to do with it. Eventually, I get her to admit that things happen around her house, but she does not want to talk about it. And a few, I'd say, 10 minutes later, we're sitting there, and loud bangs upstairs. I mean, like someone's moving furniture. I don't know if you've ever been in a two-story house and experienced someone moving around upstairs.
That's a weird feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so despite me talking to her about this, she will not open up to me about it, and I asked her if I can investigate it because, I mean, I've done a few ghost hunting experiences just for my fun. But I mean, it worries me a little bit because the amount of fear I saw on her face when trying to get me to stop talking about this was, I mean, tangible. I could tell something was terrifying her. And I'm wondering, I mean, is there a way I could talk to her about that? Or do you think, I mean, if she's in any kind of danger? I think she has a very young child, like, still in its crib. Any kind of danger she's going
to
face from
that. Yeah, have you encountered fear, John, to the point where you really felt that somebody might be in danger?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a problem in the sense that there's a lot of theories that some types of spirits, you know, feed off energy. And of course, I'm using the word feed, you know, kind of loosely, but that they use energy, and that the energy of fear, you know, it's an emotional energy that is just as strong as love and some of the other ones, and that they could use that as well to sort of feed on, to live on. So, you know, she's, I mean, I can understand why she'd be afraid, of course, but I do think there's some way that you have to try to come through that. It's important to try to take control of the situation. You know, it's her house, it's her baby, it's, you know, whatever, it's her life now. Whatever the being is, it's not, it doesn't belong there. It's not part of her life. It's not, you know, its time has come and gone. So she needs to take control. It's easy for me to say that. I know it's a difficult thing. I know that she is very much afraid, but I would just say to continue to work with her and just try to convince her that it's something that can be, it's a problem that can be solved. It's just a matter of not letting the fear overrule you and trying to just take control of the situation and be firm and say, this is my house now. You know, I mean, you might have to get some outside help. you might have to get a medium or a minister maybe. I mean, I don't know, but you might have to bring somebody in.
Do you go out on some of these investigations with equipment?
I do. I mean, I personally don't have a lot, and I've worked with, if you look through my books, you'll see that I've worked with, you know, teams throughout the United States, in fact, around the world, and they have varying degrees of equipment. I mean, some are very sort of low-tech and don't do a lot of work. I've been with other teams that have literally brought steamer trunks in off a van, you know, and opened them up and taken out tons and tons of equipment that takes hours to set up. So I've done all that, from very, very complicated investigations to very simple, low-tech ones, and different results with different types.
Well, when you do your investigating like that, you know, in the old days, they had old reel-to-reel tape recorders and things like that. Has technology made things easier?
It certainly made things easier. It's made things easier in some ways. It's easier to record data now and everything, but because there is so much equipment now, so many different things that you can do, that, you know, the Ghost Hunter's toolbox has multiplied. You know, you may have had one or two little items in it before. Now you have 20 different items. So when you're on an investigation, you have a lot of things to play with. So in that sense, it becomes more complicated, because there's simply a lot more that you can do, a lot more tools that you can use, which requires more monitoring, you know, more equipment checks and all that kind of stuff. So it does get to be a little bit more, I should say, just, you know, not necessarily complicated, but just more stuff, more to do.
Okay, we're going to come back one more final hour to go with final phone calls and interesting stories for you, John. John Kachuba on Coast to Coast AM. We shall be right back.